This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is gorgeous today. Walked out of the building and went, hey, Fiji weather! It is just absolutely gorgeous today. There's a breeze. It's 65 degrees. I actually thought it was in the 70s, but that's because we're coming out of winter. Yeah, the sun's out. So lovely. So lovely. I've been working on this novel, of course, and I just looked up and I saw what I thought was a kite, and then I realized it was like a Walmart bag. So then I thought, oh, Walmart bag kites. Anyways. Randomness. I've been working on this new novel, and, well, this new pulp fiction. People who write novels spend more time than I'm spending writing this. But in thinking about that, it's set in the far-flung future, where humanity has spread out to other planetary systems, so I get a chance to kind of think about what it would be like to live on some of these other worlds. And, you know, the first world that they go to is actually surrounding a dwarf star, so that means they don't have nearly the light, they don't have nearly the heat coming from it, and it's on this little scarred planet. And you know, I was writing that and I was thinking about Earth and just how gorgeous Earth is. How beautiful. We are blessed. Beautiful, beautiful planet. Anyways, so work is going well. Everything is puttering along. I'm doing research for a huge project. But getting a lot of good research done and gathering a lot of good information and talking with people about some ideas and things that might be possible and getting a lot of good reception for those things. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all works out. We're having our big meeting, big launch meeting next week. I've already been working on this for 2 weeks, but in order to get everybody in the same room, we're going to have all the department heads in this particular division, and we're going to have what are called the administrative assistants for the different regional offices are going to be there, and so it's going to be a big meeting. But it'll be good. It'll be good. It'll be just kind of a chance to lay out the plan for what we're trying to do and the way we're going to approach it and try to get everybody kind of pointed in the right direction. I was talking to one of the department heads today, and she had some things that she wanted to see accomplished, and I said, you know, it's been my experience in projects that there's some big components. One of them is the technological side. I said, but there is also what I call the political dynamic. And I said, you know, honestly, we can try to push on the political dynamic and try to change how some things are done. But I said, it's been my experience that even if you can kind of get that corralled and pushed back, it isn't long before something comes up. And it's, well, let's just let that one exception. And then so now you're outside the system doing that one exception. And pretty soon there's two exceptions and then four and then eight and then 16. And you're right back to the situation you were in before, so you might as well just plan from the beginning to put in the necessary flexibility to get done what you're doing now and the extrapolation against what you're doing now. Because I try not to design just for what the current state is to solve the current problem. What I try to do is to estimate what additional things people might want. And once you estimate that, then try to. There is a really cool old car. In fact, there's two of them. It looks like the guy's working on them out there in a parking lot. Cool cars. You know, that process of trying to estimate what people are going to want to do, and then extend your flexibility of the new system into that, and that way the system seems to grow with them, and you don't obsolete out. That's always kind of the plan, but, you know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes you miss the easy stuff, and it's like, oh, should have seen that coming. But that's okay. You know, we'll move forward. We'll do what we can and do the best job we can. And, you know, then we'll go from there. So I've given them an estimate that it's going to be about 3 months for me to gather this information together. And I think we'll be pretty close to that, 3 to 4. Still have several interviews to do and then start building, you know, documents and kind of making proposals and then getting to the place where we can, you know, actually propose the proposals, and then we'll see where we go from there. So it's good. It's good. Everything is good, thankfully. Still writing along. This weekend I'm planning on doing my taxes, which means I'm going to lose some time this weekend, but that's okay. Taxes have to be done. And at some point, I'm going to have to put a new roof on my house. This may be the year to do that, so it's going to be good to get some money back from my taxes, hopefully. I'll pay for some of that. The house that we're living in, we built and moved into in 1993. So the house is going on 21 years old, and it has survived well, and it has done well, but the house is going on 21 years old, so, you know, a lot of stuff needs to be coming up for those replacement things, and we've been saving up for those things, so we're okay, everything's gonna be fine. We replaced the furnace last year, and our roof needs to be replaced, because we had put 20-year shingles on it, and the shingles have been on for 20 years, and you can see, looking at them, we're at that point, they need to be replaced. Of course, the well is going to go at some point, and at some point, I'm sure my wife would like to have new floor coverings, but we'll just see how all that goes. So it's good. It's good. I'm hoping to get a little bit ahead on the week for the 5,000 words I'm supposed to get in this week. In fact, I'm hoping that I'm going to have it done tomorrow so that I can then work on taxes on Saturday and Sunday, get them fairly well squared away so I can kick back into high gear and hopefully next week get my 5,000 words in as well. But we'll see. If I'm a little off, it's not going to be the end of the world. I've been able to kind of hold my own. I'm going to turn on the air a little bit. Been able to hold my own, so it's good. And the book is, it's good. It's fine. You know, I'm just kind of rushing through it at this point just to get the basics down. And I'll have to go back and edit. But, you know, I think it's interesting, so we'll see. We'll see. See what my beta readers think. This week, in terms of a topic, I actually pulled notes for two different topics, and I'm honestly not sure which I'm going to do. I may just do both, because I came across a story, and I wasn't even aware that we were celebrating the anniversary of this, but I came across a story that this yesterday was the 40th anniversary of the Free to Be Me special that was produced by Marlo Thomas and friends. And I think we had hoped that it would start some sort of a gender revolution where we would realize that everybody could just be whatever they wanted to be. I've read several articles about, different people's reactions to these things, and Marlo Thomas commenting on it. And I guess the heart of this, it was a musical program that aired in 1974 that ABC aired, that celebrated gender-free children. And so I remember the movement vaguely. There was this movement that if we just raised our children in gender-free environments, that they would just be all the same and we wouldn't have all these stereotypes between boys and girls. And so they had a lot of different little musical numbers in here that kind of illustrated that it was okay for a boy to like to play with dolls and, you know, for a girl to be a firefighter and whatever. I forget what the exact examples were. And it aired and people were really feeling like, ta-da, see, this is going to start a new era. And the articles all sort of had a different take on where we're at. One that I was reading by Christina Hoff Summers, she related several anecdotes about how that a few months ago she found herself in a place, the American Girl Doll Palace in New York, where she said she had a transfixed 6-year-old girl attached to her hand, and the little girl said, "They know what girls love." You know, this is one of the places where you can have your doll's hair and nails done, and there's lots of different ways you can dress her and all this sort of thing. And she was also saying that, you know, she understood that there were other places like the Sports Hall of Fame that they know what boys love. And she was just saying that after 40 years of gender activism, we're really not that far from where we were. For the most part, you know, boys still like playing certain ways and girls like playing other ways. And in fact, in 2009, David Geary, University of Missouri, whoa-ho, psychologist, published the second edition of Male-Female, The Evolution of Human Sex Differences. And the author of this article was claiming that it was a comprehensive survey, 50 pages of footnotes, citing studies by neuroscientists, endocrinologists, geneticists, anthropologists, and psychologists showing a strong biological basis for many gender differences. Geary said that one of the largest and most persistent differences between the sexes is child play difference, that the female preference is for nurturing play and the male propensity for rough and tumble hold cross-culturally and even cross-species, which, you know, hey, that's pretty interesting. I mean, the old story I remember when they were trying to do the whole gender equality thing is I would remember parents talking about the fact that they thought this was going to be so great, and so, you know, they got their boys Barbie dolls so they could play with Barbie dolls, and the boys just used them as swords so they could have a sword fight. And I remember laughing at the time when I heard that decades ago. I was like, yep. So, you know, what does this all mean? Does this mean that because we have these hardwired genetic differences, not everybody does, but many, many do, hardwired genetic differences between nurturing play and rough and tumble play, that we should then say, well, boys will just be boys, and so when they bully, that we just say, well, that's just the way boys play? Well, no, of course not. And just because most girls like nurturing play, that we should say, well, you know, there's no point in having any sort of explorer programs or any kind of fun, like, Boy Scout stuff to do in the Girl Scouts because, you know, girls just don't like that stuff. Well, of course not. But I think by now, hopefully, we have gotten to the place where we have demonstrated that, in fact, there is a difference between boys and girls. That in general, we've finally got to the place where we are willing to admit what seems like should be obvious, that there really is a fundamentally different in way in which we approach life. But that doesn't mean that we cannot understand each other, and that does not mean that we cannot accept that each of us has different viewpoints, and we can learn to work within those viewpoints. So it was, you know, it was pretty interesting to have like the anniversary come around, and I hadn't even heard of it, but it was like, hey, 40 years ago, great, terrific. So that was one little topic I was thinking about, and it kind of very tangentially is related to another little topic, but I forgot that I didn't tell you about the alien invasion at my house. I had an alien invasion at my house this morning. It was weird there for a minute. I was downstairs, I had exercised, I was getting myself some breakfast, everything was fine, it was good, everybody's great. All of a sudden I hear this, whoa! I mean, this low bass rumble just coming from everywhere. I mean, you know, big enough that it was just like shaking stuff. And I'm thinking, what is going on, you know? So I'm turning around and I'm looking around the room. I'm waiting for the flashy lights outside, or, you know, waiting for the plane to come crashing through the wall or something. I'm like, what? So I walk, I try to get a bead on it. You know, sound that low, it's hard to localize because it's just everywhere. And I started walking up the stairs to go upstairs to see if something was going on upstairs. And I thought, no, that's coming from down here. And suddenly I realized that the subwoofer downstairs, which is, I don't know, it's like 200 watts or something like that. So it's got some kick to it. The connection on the back of it, the cord that goes into it, has always been a little wiggly. And if you wiggle the cord, it will always go bop, bop, bop. And so somehow the cord finally bent enough that it had turned that on. But it didn't just turn on instantly. It kind of went, wow. So I'm trying to figure out what this thing is. Suddenly I realized what it was. So I walked over there and yanked the cord out of the back. And sure enough, that shut it off. But boy, there was a few minutes there when I thought for sure we were having some kind of glorious something or other happening. So that was fun. Gave the morning a little flavor to it. Anyways, the other topic that I was thinking about doing today was a TED Talk called Future Devices Could Read Images from Our Minds. It was by Mary Lou Jepsen. And she prefaced her interest in the brain. She was an engineer, and she prefaced the interest in her brain to the fact that she had had brain surgery 18 years before. And since that time, brain science has become, you know, a personal passion of hers. And the reason is when they did brain surgery, they didn't necessarily cut out any of the gray matter, she said, but it was that gooey part that's dead center that makes key hormones and neurotransmitters. And immediately after her surgery, then the task fell to her to decide what amounts of each of over a dozen powerful chemicals that she was going to take every day. Because if she took nothing, she would die within hours. Okay. This is very interesting. So she's got to mix these chemicals together that her brain would normally be doing. And so she said, every day now for 18 years, I've had to try to decide the combination and mixtures of chemicals to get them right to stay alive. And she said there's been many close calls. Wow, that's a fascinating life. She said for a while, she decided to try an experiment where she tried the doses and chemicals that would be typical of a man in his early 20s. So this is how it tangentially ties into the other talk. I'm getting my mail, one moment. And she said by putting herself in that state, yep, good. Let's check the bottom here real quick. Man, it's a gorgeous day. I just stopped and rolled down the window. It is just lovely, lovely, lovely. Whew, good day. It's always a good day, but good weather. Let's put it that way. And she said she was blown away by how her thoughts changed when she gave herself the chemical mix of a 20-year-old young man. She said, I was angry all the time. She said, I thought about sex constantly. She said, and I thought I was the smartest person in the entire world. Yeah. And she said, over the course of the years, she said, I've met guys like that, or maybe a toned-down version of that. She said, I was kind of extreme, she said, but to me, the surprise was, I wasn't trying to be arrogant. I was actually trying, with a bit of insecurity, to fix a problem in front of me, and it just didn't come out that way. Fun stuff. Backing into my garage. From that then, she said, I finally have got things kind of tuned up. And she said, I've always been one that thinks in images. And she said, I've got myself tuned up to the place now where she said, you know, I can imagine in very vivid images what I want to engineer, what I want to build. And she said, things are working good. And that kind of led her into a talk about images. And in fact, one of the things that she's been working on, I think she's the one that's working on, is they hooked up people to a brain imaging scanner, MRI. And she showed some scans. She said, this is the scan of a person who's looking at a given picture. And then this is the scan of the same person who's imagining they're looking at that same picture. And she said they're functionally identical. So that led them to do an experiment, really fascinating experiment, where they showed people just hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of YouTube videos watching their brain while they were watching these things. And then they had the computer calibrate all that stuff. And then they had them watch another video that they hadn't seen before, and they had the computer try to guess what this person was looking at. And she played the video side by side, and okay, well, it's not exact. Of course it's not. But, you know, it's not completely off the wall either. I mean, the computer is getting certain things, that it's actually just watching this person's brain scan, and it's actually translating that into an image, which portends all sorts of things. And her claim is that really we just need better resolution at this point. If we could just get better, faster resolution and put these machines through enough training, that you could literally think an image and the computer would know what you were thinking, or the image that you were thinking of. And she said that leads to all sorts of interesting possibilities, one of which would be the ability to communicate with each other in raw thoughts. I'm looking for where she gets to it. Could you imagine if we could leapfrog language and communicate directly with human thought? What would we be capable of then? And how would we learn to deal with the truths of unfiltered human thought? That was my first. That was my first reaction, like, whoa, I'm not really sure. I just want every thought that flitters through my brain, every image that flitters through my brain to just come out on a screen somewhere. That would not be so good. She said, you think the internet was big? These are huge questions. It might be as irresistible as a tool to amplify our thinking and communication skills. And indeed, that same very tool may prove to lead to a cure for Alzheimer's and similar diseases. And she thinks that we're going to open this door no matter what. She said, you know, it might be 5 years, might be 15 years. She said, it's hard to imagine it'll take much longer. And she said, we need to learn now how to take the step to deal with this. And, you know, personally, I think if that capability ever ended up where just whatever we thought would come, you talk about privacy concerns. Oh, man. And we would all just need to really start meditating to get to the place where we would control our thoughts, because the flesh obviously is going to be in there and imaging all sorts of things that it should not be imaging. So we can all have a brave new world to look forward to there. And it will be very interesting to me to see if, in fact, we go down this path or if it's really worth going down. Because I suspect that we have language for a reason. Because I don't know how anybody else's brain is, but there's a fair amount of chaos in my brain. And not chaos in a bad term, but I mean, my thoughts and things can ping around to all sorts of different stuff. I mean, I do have stretches where I'm very focused and working on things, but if I relax and step back a bit, man, it's just like ping, 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 you know, all over the place. And I would think that that would be very disorienting. And one of the things that language does for us is, because there is some effort involved, we choose our words, we choose what we're going to express. And so there's very much of a filter. And I think there's a real benefit to having that filter. So this is going to be very interesting to see what the technologists come up with. And then also to see how long it's on the shelf before people decide they're just going to, you know, either only use it when they're with their spouses alone, although that might not work out so well either, or only use it for themselves alone and not let anybody else tap into it. Brave new world coming, my friends. Technology, where will we be in 50 years? This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.